Hey, it's John Harris, and I just got my True Diagnostics True Age test results, and boy, was I surprised. I found out my biological age is 0.36% of a year younger than my actual age. This is good because if my biological age were 5 years more than my true age, my risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease could jump by as much as 30 to 50%. Here's a kicker. 90% of aging is in my control through lifestyle and habits. It was so easy. A quick at-home finger prick, send it off, and in 2 to 3 weeks, I got a detailed report. The test showed that my heart and lungs are in good shape, but I could use some extra support for my immune system. It gave me tailored clips from Harvard and Yale scientists, like tweaking my diet and sleep, to slow aging and cut risks. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Harris to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use HARRIS at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
60% of people will avoid your business if you have an unattractive logo. This podcast is sponsored by Resurrection Design Company, which helps kingdom-minded businesses and churches fix that problem. Right now, they're running a special for the listeners of this podcast, a free website design for the first 2 people who sign up for a brand identity package. This offer expires the last day of this month, so get out your phone now and visit resurrectiondesign.co/matter to claim your free website design. The link is in the description.
So at the gate, you need a barbarian to fight back against you. And what I'm getting from you is you don't really believe that the barbarians aren't, you know, the traditional barbarians. It's just, I don't like the left.
Oh, it's very anti-left. I mean, look,
Trump wouldn't be a barbarian in this scenario.
Well, you know, and think about how contrary this is to the example of Jesus, because Jesus comes to ancient Israel when it's under Roman occupation, where the people of Israel are deeply oppressed, and he doesn't come and overthrow the government. He doesn't come and rule in the way that these Christian right people want to rule. He comes in and he loves other people. He serves other people and even forgives the people who are executing him as they're executing him. And yet you look at this Christian right, the MAGA Christian right. It is will to power. It is cruelty. It is dominance. Look how they applaud as Trump is cruel to immigrants, just vicious, depriving them of their constitutional rights. This is nothing about this is drawn from historic Christian theology. So
all right. With that, we start the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. That was David French on MSNBC talking about the difference between Donald Trump and Jesus Christ. I don't know if you knew there was a difference. There actually is a difference. And according to David French, though, the difference is that Jesus didn't come in the same way Donald Trump did. Donald Trump is unkind. He's aggressive. He does things that are just cruel. And he's a barbarian, I guess. And Jesus came and he was just nice and kind and never did anything cruel, never did anything that was mean. And that's the way we should be. And of course, there are contexts to how we should operate in the political sphere, especially when there's evil in front of us. There, the government does have a role to play. But even Jesus, not being in the civil magistrate's role, did do some aggressive things. Obviously, the first and most famous one being driving out the money changers from the temple with a whip. But if you keep reading the Bible, if you get to the end of the book, you will find there's this guy that comes with a double-edged sword, and it happens to be Jesus. And so anyway, I just wanted to point out that there are places to be aggressive. You don't want to be aggressive in the wrong places. You shouldn't treat your wife or your family or your friends or your church family the way, of course, you treat someone who's breaking the law if you are in a magisterial capacity working. But there, of course, are places that God wants us to be aggressive. And David French there, just so disappointing to me what's happened to him. What happened to you, David French? I mean, I never was a big David French fan, but it's amazing to me that was the guy in 2015. Can you believe it? He was defending the Confederate flag flying at the Columbia, South Carolina state capitol. He was defending that, and that was a whole David French ago, but it really wasn't like that long ago. That was 9 years ago, but a different guy, different times, and I think he knows where his meal ticket comes from. And of course, that will be read as, John, you're saying that he is just an opportunist. Well, I don't know if he's just an opportunist, but I think he is an opportunist. I do think he's an opportunist. He takes some bonkers views sometimes. Anyway, figured I would get the blood going by starting the whole episode off with a clip from David French. We're not going to camp out on David French, though. I just decided to. I saw it not too many days ago, and I thought, oh, I'll just include that in the podcast. It'll be a little something to throw out there at the beginning. Anyway, we have a show for you today. We're going to talk about the Gospel Coalition and continue a discussion that I started in the last podcast about demographics. I actually meant to talk about this last Friday, and I just ran out of time. I was at a conference over the weekend near Philadelphia, and had a great time with Jeff Clearer, Seth Brickley, Andrew Rappaport. We're all there. Bunch of pastors who were former evangelical free guys. And we did a bunch of stuff. But one of the things we did was we went on a tour of Philadelphia, a Christian heritage tour led by Peter Lilback from Westminster Seminary. He's the president. And I was actually, I have to say, impressed with especially one thing he said in particular. He said that, I don't remember who it was in Philadelphia, but it might have been, one of the seminaries there. Had taken, I think it was, I'm not trying to remember which seminary it was, but they had taken down a statue of George Whitefield. And he said, look, I wish I could find out where they put it, because we would take it at Westminster. And I was really encouraged to hear that. I don't know a lot about the president of Westminster, but he may not be woke like some of the other, or even woke light like some of the other presidents of evangelical institutions. And that was encouraging, but had a great time. And thank you for your prayers. I know some of you do pray for me as I travel. I was actually in Tennessee for the last few days. That's why I haven't been able to podcast at all. Wasn't able to do the American Churchman last night. We'll try to do that on Friday, because Matthew Pearson actually has a wonderful article he wrote for TruthScript. You should all just go check it out. Go to truthscript.com. Check out the slop apologetics article Matthew Pearson put together. And it's just been busy. Had a bunch of stuff to do in Tennessee. I was actually hanging out for a little bit with the Ridge Runner guys down there. And there's some opportunities, guys. If you're someone who is, let's say, in a blue state, things might be a little more stable now in your mind. But you went through 2020, you saw what it was like, and blue states are still getting more blue, but they just have kind of a ceiling they can't go against because of the Trump administration. But if you're sitting there and you're thinking, man, I think if Vance doesn't win the next go around, I may be looking for a place to leave. If you're in that position, you may want to start looking now. And as much as I want to keep community stable, I realize this is going to happen whether I say it or not. This is going to happen whether it's the Ridge Runner Project or not. I would say if you're someone who values local areas, you want to integrate into them, and you want to support the local conservative structure that already exists, check out Ridge Runner. If Tennessee is even a consideration, especially if you're already going there, you might as well check out the Ridge Runner Project. So anyway, I could say a lot more about that, but I want to get started with the content of this podcast. I do have another announcement real quick here. I told CJ that I would plug this. Not David French. Not plugging David French. I would plug this. The Dabney Thornwell Institute. The Dabney Thornwell Institute, they're publishing some forgotten publications. I have a copy of Forgotten Saints in my office. I think it's right, somewhere in my office. I don't remember where. I'll find it. But I was just given a copy of that. And of course, there's a number of guys, Robert Louis Dabney, James Henley Thornwell, Palmer, Girardot, and then Practical Philosophy by Robert Louis Dabney has just been republished by the Dabney Thornwell Institute. And if you want a copy of that, you can, I think, just click here and it'll take you to Amazon. There you go. You can get a copy for $25. That's amazing. And a hardcover for about $40. They're doing a lot of work. And one of the blessings about technology, I know there's a lot of curses, but one of the blessings about even AI and all that is you can scan pages fast. You can format things faster. And I think it's going to open up possibilities of publishing some of these old dead guys who even Banner of Truth, I think, would probably be reluctant to publish. But they had some good things to say. And so I wanted to just plug that. I love, if you have an organization like that, I love history. If you're publishing some old dead guys that have been forgotten, I would love to know about what you're doing. Just contact me on social media. Also needed to let everyone know I am speaking at the Operation Joshua event in Melbourne, Florida, May 17th. So in 10 days, I'll be in Melbourne, Florida. Would love to see you there. It's not far from Orlando. And I'm going to be there probably less than a day. I'm flying in, flying out, but I will have that afternoon. And I would love to see some of you at this particular event. So if you want to get copies of my book, I'll autograph them for you, Against the Waves, Christian Order in a Liberal Age. Some of you might have seen Doug Wilson, actually. I was not expecting this, but he decided to endorse this book. It's his book of the month. Here we go. Against the Waves. So was really happy to see that. And I actually just got off the podcast with Seth Gruber, my friend Seth. He interviewed me about the book, and I see an uptick in interest. So check it out. If you would get two copies, that would be helpful. Give one to your pastor. You can go to againstthewavesbook.com. All right, well, let's get into it. I have a lot to talk about. And in the words of Jerry Reed, we have a long way to go and a short time to get there. So let's do it. We're going to start here. I wanted to just briefly mention something. This is purely political, but it's something that interests me. This is a headline from, what is this, the Daily Caller, May 1st. So this is about a week ago. China erupts, furious workers riot as factories collapse under Trump's tariffs. There's more to the tariffs than just economics. This is also, I think, something that is concerned. Trump is concerned with national security. And if you read this article from the Daily Caller, it brings up a situation that happened a few years ago in Hong Kong and says, hey, this might spark something like that. And I can't help but think maybe that's part of it. We are in a war with China, even if it's a cold war. So anyway, you know, I was having trouble with my sound during the Seth Gruber podcast, and I'm wondering, I did some adjustments. I did some changes. I'm wondering, though, if it wasn't enough. I don't know. Maybe I need a plug-in or something. Hopefully that doesn't happen again. If it is, I'll try to keep my eye on the chat comments. Here's another headline from the Epoch Times. U.S. ends trade exemption that enabled flood of cheap Chinese goods. And one of the things this gets into is the stealing of intellectual property. China is apparently very known for this. They steal intellectual property, and then they sell it back to the United States. So you could come up with an invention. You could come up with a product. They will make it cheaper. Even if you send it to China and say, I want your factory to make this, you won't hear from them again. And all of a sudden you'll see, wow, it's being sold on Amazon or it's being sold on eBay. And they just stole your idea. And this is one of the big problems with trading with China. And one of the reasons I think for the tariffs is they do not have the same value system. They do not play the same way we play. And it is unfair when the American workers, American manufacturers are restricted. They cannot produce things that they don't have the rights to. Whereas in China, you can just be undercut so easily. So you pay all this money to develop something, you never get to see the reward of it, and it just stifles development. And China relies on us for development. So who's going to do the developing if there's no incentives to develop and if China's just stealing from us? I think that if you can curtail that somehow, you will get a boost in innovative thinking, and America could lead in inventions and all the things that America used to lead in more. We have some good news from the Trump administration. Trump creates a Religious Liberty Commission on National Day of Prayer. And if you've noticed, the Trump administration has pretty much been overtly Christian. And even the Paula White's faith-based organization, I'm not crazy about Paula White, but her role as the senior advisor for Trump's religious Liberty Commission and his faith advisor. She is bringing in people that some of them are solid and they're all Christian. It's not like in Biden's administration, or they're part of Christendom at least, where there was all kinds of different religions represented. So I thought that was a good thing to see, that Trump is going to have a National Day of Prayer. It's been a while since I've seen a headline like that. This was just intriguing to me. I'm kind of doing the small stories first. Hollywood bigwigs want middle-class Americans to subsidize garbage movies. Now, of course, tell me what you really think, Ireland Owens from the Daily Caller. This article is really about an interest, John Voight's heading this up, to try to incentivize people making movies once again in the United States, and tax cuts and that kind of thing, so they won't go overseas to do it. Now, the only reason I bring this up is to say this. There's a lot of people looking for positive solutions, and there's not a lot of positive solutions out there. So what I wanted to propose is this. If the Trump administration is going to try to incentivize movies in the United States once again, so the Hollywood film industry starts coming back and not going to Canada, not going to, I don't know what other countries they film in, but wherever they're filming, they want to do it in California again. And they're probably not. It'd probably be like Georgia or something, because California, the state laws are so terrible. But if they want to do it in the United States, I would suggest the Trump administration should somehow figure out a mechanism for requiring the values of the base of the Trump administration. So Christian, conservative, American values. If there's a way to do this, and I'm not sure exactly what that way would be, but if there's a way to deregulate, but I would hate if it became somehow incentives that the Trump administration handed out. Like, it would be better if it was just whatever disincentives are there, those are taken away. But if there's a way to do that, and in tandem, maybe say you can have these disincentives taken away if you produce films within these guidelines. I don't know. But someone talked to me the other day about this, that maybe the National Endowment for the Arts shouldn't be abolished. Maybe it should just be weaponized for Christian American values. And it's an interesting idea. I tend to want localism. I tend to not want the government in these things. It's unconstitutional anyway, but we're certainly post-constitutional. And yeah, maybe that is something to look at. Maybe that is something that, especially if you're going to do it anyway, maybe the values that the founders would have had and the people who make the backbone of this nation, make the nation work, make the country work, I should say, maybe those should be reflected in our art. Maybe we shouldn't be incentivizing art that rips down the very core of what this country is about. Food for thought. But I think that there's something to that. And I would love to hear conservatives talk about that a lot more. All right, well, let's get into this. This is kind of bad news. And I talked about this last week. Colorado, heavily amended bill adding legal protections for transgender people, passes Colorado Senate. So it's passed the representative house. It has passed the Senate. It is now set to be signed by the Democrat governor. And this is something that Chase Davis was leading the way on. And William Wolf was out there trying to stop this bill. House Bill 25-1312, dubbed the Kelly Loving Act in honor of a transgender woman killed during the 2022 Club Q shooting in Colorado Springs. It would make it a discriminatory act to intentionally not refer to a transgender person by their chosen name. It also requires school policies to be inclusive for all reasons that a student changes their name. And it says schools must allow students to choose from any variation contained in dress code policies. The bill includes a provision that says someone does not need a court order if they want to change their gender marker on a driver's license or other identification a second or third time. Colorado allows an X gender marker on state IDs, but that has led to some people having trouble with student law. Okay, I'm going to, end it there. So this is obviously a very bad bill. This is going to weaponize the mechanism of the state against those who would use the pronouns that are accurate and not the preferred pronouns, and names that are accurate and not the preferred names that people who engage in fantasies would like to have attributed to them. This is going to be aggressively anti-Christian. This is going to cause all kinds of problems when there's children who want to make these transitions and parents don't agree with it. This is a blue state, and they're going aggressively blue. And this is within the Trump administration, right? This is separate from the Trump administration, but it is within the time period that the Trump administration is in power, and it doesn't seem to matter. And this is one of the things I've noticed is red states are very complacent right now. For example, Texas could be deporting people and lending a hand. There's a big job to be done. And under the Biden administration, of course, that was the big show of force that we're going to do this whether you like it or not. Well, right now, the Trump administration won't stop them. So why aren't they lending a hand? The Trump administration has been tied up in court. The states could easily, the red states, could just do this themselves, and the Trump administration would not stop them. Of course, there would be court orders and so forth, but there's no executive branch to do anything about it. So why aren't states being bullish? Why aren't the red states being bullish right now? They're just kind of coasting. And the blue states, some of whom at least, are being very aggressive right now. This is one example of that. So if you're a pastor, if you're a Christian, if you're part of the many Christian organizations and the workers for them that exist in Colorado Springs in particular, this has some ramifications. And now is the time. If you haven't weighed in, now is the time. You really better weigh in. This is not good. So Colorado is heading towards, I'm afraid, some chaos on this question. The Supreme Court lets Trump, though, administration enforce a ban on trans-identified military troops. So this is happening simultaneously. There is a ban on trans-identified military troops under the Trump administration. That's happening at the federal level or the national or the general level. And then, of course, on the local or the state level, you have Colorado doing their thing. This is just another reminder. There's at least two Americas. I would say there's probably more. There's probably seven or eight. But basically, though, there's two very different visions for what America should be. And of course, Christianity Today getting in on this. These are some headlines I saw from last week, how evangelicals in seven countries view Trump's first 100 days. And of course, I actually, you know what? I did have it pulled up with the paywall. Well, I guess there's a paywall, so I can't read it, but you can guess what this is talking about. Evangelicals in other countries not too hot on the Trump administration. And of course, applying that pressure, what do our brothers and sisters in other places think? What's our witness? And then Christianity Today, how ICE deleted international students at Christian colleges. Oh, the humanity. Oh, the shame. The article says that at least eight evangelical schools have reported student records being deleted. Oklahoma Christian University lost two, Baylor lost three, Concordia lost 10, and it says more than 60 students at evangelical institutions have been impacted. The disappearances begin in March. The disappearances begin in March. Just people just disappearing. Administration's just disappearing people. It's just like the Soviets. It's just like the Nazi regime. They're disappearing people. Speaking, of course, from Christianity Today's perspective, at the same time, it began quietly canceling the legal status of at least 1,800 students. So quiet. You're just doing it under the cover of darkness so no one knows. You can't do anything about it. In some cases, the government now says it was not revoking visas. It was only deleting the digital link between the student visas and their schools. The move erased student authorizations to study, effectively forcing them to stop and to consider leaving the country. Oh, no. They would consider leaving the country over this. I mean, maybe it's not that great of a country if that's the case. I don't know. Maybe they should go with the evangelicals in the other countries that don't like Trump and be with them. Maybe that's a better place to be anyway, right? I mean, we're so terrible. In court hearings this week, the government revealed that it had combed an FBI database for thousands of international student names without thoroughly vetting them. At Campbellsville, there were roughly 30% of the student body comes from abroad. One student appeared to have his SEVIS record terminated. All right, so let me just get to the gist of this. This is the bottom line. Let's get to the end. Oh, I don't want to read that. Okay. We are not going to put, let's see. Okay. The registrar, a native of India, said many of the seminary's international students are unshaken by the administration's antagonism towards immigrants. Some are doctoral students. So it's painting the David and Goliath thing. Trump administration is going after these students. They're afraid of ICE. There's been some errors. And one of the things that I think it is important to realize is, look, it's the government. There's going to be some incompetence. I hate when we see it. I do. I think that we, and I'm sure every effort is being made to minimize this. You are going to have some mistakes made. And when you have as many people who are here illegally as there are, there's going to be some errors. There's going to be some mistakes. There's going to be some people who should not have been deported, who were deported under certain laws. And the, you know, the administration should, and it sounds like in this situation they did correct a temporary scare that 60 students, I guess, had that they might have to go back. But one of the things that I think jumps out at me from this is it is a privilege to be in the United States. It is a place people want to be. And if that ends, if the will, let's just say the American people have decided, you know, we don't want this anymore. It's our country. This is a program. We don't want this anymore. It is the prerogative of the people who live there, not foreigners. And I understand if there's an agreement that's been made, you want to honor that agreement. But to try to rectify a legitimate problem, a problem that threatens the very existence of the United States and the very character and identity of the United States at a basic level, to try to rectify that problem and to have some mistakes made along the way that are since rectified is not a surprise. It's not a shock. And Christianity Today, I can bet you, would not do anything close to this if it was Biden. If it was the Biden administration and there were some errors in paperwork or something, there would, it would be no big deal. But this gets a whole story and a whole moral play. And it just strikes me as if it's such a bad country, if Trump administration's so bad, maybe you should go hide out in another country. Maybe you should leave. Maybe you should be with all those Christians in other countries who don't like Trump. Churches sue Trump administration over ICE raids in houses of worship. This is interesting to me. The whole argument here is that churches are safe havens and the government can't come in and violate the sanctity of the church, the holy status the church has. And they're so up in arms about this. And there were Romans 13-ing everyone to death when the government was enforcing COVID lockdowns. But now, you know, the government doesn't have any interest in coming in and arresting people who are here illegally, who would try to find a safe haven in a church. And believe you me, there are places in which this is happening. All those rainbow flag waving churches would be more than happy. I shouldn't say all, but many of them, I'm sure, would be more than happy to have people come in and even live in the church. And I was noticing there was a bill. I don't know if this was what it was in regards to, or maybe there was a motivation, but it was in Colorado that just got squashed. And it was a state bill that would have maintained churches could build living quarters on their properties without conforming to local zoning rules. And it got squashed, but interesting to me that that was even a thought. Why would they want that? I mean, look, you could build apartments if you wanted for illegal migrants. I'm just saying, if that's the rule, and no one can do anything about it. And so this is also, you know, a development that's out there. I just want to point out, I'm sure it's the same people who are saying this were very big on shutting the church down during COVID, and that didn't seem to matter. And then we have the SBC. I want to talk about this and get into some demographic stuff, but the Southern Baptist Convention membership declines. Baptisms attendance are up, according to a report. Southern Baptist Convention has witnessed another year of membership decline, but has also seen worship attendance and baptisms increase, according to a recent report. According to a report released Wednesday on the annual church profile compiled by Lifeway Research, the SBC has approximately 12.72 million members in 2024, a 2% decline from approximately 12.98 million reported for 2023. However, the SBC saw 250,643 baptisms in 2024, which was about 10% more than the 20 than the last previous year. So what does this mean? There's a rise in baptisms, but a decline in membership, according to this. And I don't know what to make of this exactly. I'm a little surprised about the baptisms. I don't know how that's working or what they're counting as a baptism. But I do know that a lot of churches have left the denomination. And I think a lot of them have left because of the drift in the denomination. They couldn't even pass the law amendment. We'll see if that happens this time around. I've been hearing rumblings. I mean, I hear this every year, though, that this year we're really going to get them. So this year there's a more of an enthusiasm behind the law amendment and making sure that pastors in the Southern Baptist Convention, if they have women pastors, at least they can be kicked out by the Credentials Committee. Now, I don't know. I'm not as bullish on this as some people. I'm not as excited as some people. I don't see it happening, but if it does, the credential, your personnel is your policy. You have to have a good credentials committee. You have to actually win some elections. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Obviously, I want the largest Protestant denomination to be solid, but it's losing members. And if those are conservative churches, I don't know what to say. It's it gets harder and harder and harder to win. And then you keep making the bar more and more and more watered down. I mean, even like, hey, if we win and the law amendment gets passed, what kind of a victory is that? In my mind, I'm like, that's just like, shouldn't every Southern Baptist, that's just in the Baptist Faith and Message 2000, every Southern Baptist should get behind the law amendment. But they couldn't last time around, which is incredible. So I don't have an explanation for the baptism thing, but there are more baptisms according to this report. And I don't know how they're calculating that. And if that's the case, then Maybe the denomination after the conservative wave has kind of settled and those guys have left who don't want to deal with the direction of the nomination. Maybe there will be some numbers changing. Maybe there'll be more people coming in. I don't know. I tend to doubt that, but I'd be very, very curious to see how they're calculating this, I suppose, and what counts as a baptism and that kind of thing. But let's see. Okay. So we're going to sort of now, after having said everything I said, I want to frame this, a discussion on demographics. Last episode, I talked about Gen Z. I talked about how Gen Z is a bit up in the air. Where are they going to go? I am not convinced Gen Z is super right wing. Certainly not if you have men and women together. Now, if you just look at men, there is evidence to suggest, yes, they are more, their voting pattern is towards Trump in the United States. There's evidence to suggest that they've been kicked to the curb so many times, and so they are against the people who did that to them. They're against the liberal order or the feminist order that has done this to them. However, I also pointed out there's some mixed information about where their social views are, even for men. It seems like Gen Z is the most radically pro-abortion generation that we've had. They're the most radically LGBTQ plus normalization friendly generation we've had on the whole, men and women together. And if the mechanism is democracy or some sort of representative government, it doesn't matter if the men, I mean, unless the men take some kind of power, then I don't know what you can do. You have now women going to college more so than men, women getting advancements in influential roles. Men aren't. Men are the ones who are now, you know, they're doing the construction and things like they've always done, but now they're relegated to these more non-influential roles. And if that's the case, I don't know how that rectifies itself. I mean, there's people who want to foment a revolution of some kind. And so, men will take their rightful place as the leaders of society through some kind of revolution. But I have so many questions about how that would work and how that would get us to a better spot. Obviously, the best thing is for young men to look at ways they can get influence in their local communities first. But wherever they can get influence, try to get the influence you can. I understand you're gatekept out of some things. Go to the places you're not gatekept out of. Do whatever you can to gain influence, and with the power that you gain, do good with it. Don't just punish enemies. I'm not saying you can't have some justice, but actually promote a positive vision for your community and your society. And if you're a Christian, this is a no-brainer. That's the solution to so much of this. Men just got to do the rightful, manly thing to do. Don't just black pill and disqualify yourself at early stages by saying things online that are liabilities. Go out there and really fight in the real world for something tangible. That's been my message for a long time. Redditors, fandom wikis, Blue Anon highlight a lot of Gen Z activists. Yeah, I mean, and look, there's a place for that. There's a place for social media, but I'm about to show you what I think the Gospel Coalition has figured out about this. And I want to set it up this way. Australia Prime Minister Albanese makes stunning comeback with landslide win. So an Albanese Prime Minister had a landslide win in Australia. And according to this article, it looks like Gen Zers help make this happen. Not so bullish. And now I haven't examined this in detail, but in Canada, some mixed results here. In Canada, it looks like Gen Zers actually were more in favor of the more conservative, who wasn't even that conservative, but they were in favor of the conservative candidate in their recent prime minister election. But overall, it was a landslide pretty much for the Liberal Party. Let me see if I can find where it talks about Gen Z here. Maybe it wasn't this article. Maybe it was another article I was looking at for that. Anyway, there's mixed results here. And I kind of think, and this has been my take, this was my take last episode, that Gen Zers are essentially, this doesn't want me. There we go. Gen Zers are a bit lost. They're a bit overall, not every one of them, but they are some very deracinated, and they're looking for some stability. And the right offers more of that. They offer a better deal overall for Gen Z males in particular. And so that is an attractive quality. I think Christians have an opportunity here that they're probably not taking advantage of, but that is an opportunity. That is a weakness that the left has. But I think the left, their strategy is bread and circuses and playing on the juvenile fantasies and activities of Gen Z, even males, offering those kinds of things as an alternative incentivizing things, giving them the life they want so they can video game all day or that kind of thing. I mean, it's kind of like two visions. And I don't exactly know where Gen Z is going to end up long term. That's the thing that's an unknown right now. I don't take it for granted. I don't take it as a done deal that they're just on the right and they're going to remain on the right and all of that. I think that if they are on the right, they're going to change the way the right looks, and not for the better necessarily. That's why it's so imperative for the people who do have virtue out there to go hold up the standard. If we don't do that, then we do wind up like Australia. We do wind up like Canada. Alberta says there's an Alberta Next panel, it's called, and they discussed Alberta's future in Canada, says Premier Smith. There apparently secession is on the table for some people in Alberta. That's like their, if you want to call it a Bible Belt, that's like their little small Bible Belt that they have. They're real hardcore conservatives live there, and they don't want anything to do with this new Canada that's emerging. I mean, I can't even believe Canada did this in a way. I mean, they're suiciding their culture. They're importing so many people, especially from India. They won't have a culture left. And apparently Canada's okay with that. They're just going to keep going that direction. America seems to be the outlier. America seems, you look at Europe, you look at Canada, you look at Australia, you look at any Western kind of country, America's the outlier. America's the place where, I mean, I was reading years ago, should I even say that I read this? I did. I read Alexander Dugin's book. And Alexander Dugin is, I mean, that's the, Glenn Beck called it the Mein Kampf for the right. And I was like, oh, I got to read it then. I got to find out what it says. And I read it, and you know, there's some interesting things in there, but it's Russian. This is a guy who advises Putin. And anyway, one of the things though he kept saying is like, basically our hope is in America, that America can somehow take back nationalism for everyone so that everyone can avoid this globalist kind of slop world that we were in 2020. And I think that's interesting that the hopes of the world, that anyone who just wants basic kind of, we want our own country, that very basic instinct is America's the torchbearer. America's the, and you're in America sitting there and you're like, oh, that's kind of scary. we're on the precipice here, man. It's not like, we're on a knife's edge here. It could go the other way in the next presidential election. But this is where you seem to have some hope. This is where you seem to have some Gen Zers that were able to form a coalition with other generations and actually get Trump over the line. Hasn't happened in other places. So what are the options? Hey, if we got Alberta, that might be a net gain for the United States. And then if we could get rid of maybe some parts of New England, I mean, I know this is heresy to older generations, but maybe Gen Z, maybe that's the generation that's able to think outside the box on these things and actually go back to something a little more even rooted. I mean, we were a federal republic. That kind of thing was a Hartford Convention. They were talking about joining Canada, New England was. So this is in the American spirit. It's not something that's foreign to it. Here's what TGC, I think, figured out, though. This is what I've been building up towards. TGC, the Gospel Coalition, put this out. Now's the time, Gen Z and the church's renewal. Now, in this article, they claim that 50% of the attendees of the 7,000 that were at the Gospel Coalition's 2025 conference were Gen Z. I don't think that Gen Zers are the conference-going type. That's the point that I made. And I think that as we look at this, I don't know whether to believe Gospel Coalition or not. I don't know if Gen Z actually showed up in those numbers, but that's what they want you to think. And maybe it did happen. I don't know. There's no evidence I could find online to suggest this. I couldn't find pictures. Everything I found seemed to indicate, and I think it's probably older millennials, Gen X, but let's just say that that's true. Whether it's propaganda or not, I would find it hard to believe they could put something like this out there if 7,000 people went and if it was so out of step with what actually happened. It must have happened. So if whether it was 30%, 40%, 50%, some Gen Zers showed up at that conference, apparently. Don't know how they got there. Don't know if there was scholarship funds. I don't know how that all worked, but apparently that happened. Now, that might mean I have to reanalyze some things if that's the case. If Gospel Coalition is getting that many Gen Zers, that would be 3,500 Gen Zers. That's bigger than any other group in conservative or reformed evangelicalism that I know of that is holding conferences that are national and trying to attract Gen Zers. I mean, maybe I don't even know if Crew can top that. I don't know. And I don't think they're reformed, really. So in the reformed evangelical world, that's pretty impressive in my mind. But you might ask yourself, you might say, self, the Gospel Coalition's a joke and they get ratioed on social media, especially X, all the time. And there's people dismissing them all the time and saying they're irrelevant. I don't think that's the case, guys. And I may have even said in the past, I think I don't know if I've ever said they are irrelevant unless I was talking about like they're, you know, when it comes to political fights, they're irrelevant or something like they're not a factor. But when it comes to influence in this world, they are a factor. And I don't know that they're as irrelevant as people have been led to believe. And there's a false perception we have by looking at the metrics on X. And so I wanted to look this up. I was curious. Social media fact sheet. I went to Pew Research Center. YouTube is the top most popular social media website. Then Facebook, then Instagram, then Pinterest, then TikTok, then LinkedIn, then WhatsApp, then Snapchat, then X. Then X. For some of you out there, not all of you, but for some of you, X is the format. X is the place. You think if it didn't happen on X, I mean, X, Elon Musk was able to sway the election from buying X. I think that did factor in probably. X is not as popular as I thought it was. And here's the breakdown according to age category. So 18 to 29, there's your Gen Zers. It looks like it's actually, I didn't have this in order. So it looks like it's actually YouTube, then Instagram, then Snapchat, then Facebook, then Reddit, then actually TikTok, then Reddit, then X. I mean, X is on the bottom. Now, this is the kind of thing. So here's the thing that I've been thinking. You could have X Gen Zers, Gen Z males on X, going, you know, based and all the rest. You can get excited about that, but then you realize what a drop in the bucket that is. And you realize you look around in your world and you're not seeing it as much as you see it online. I think it's important for us to gain some perspective. I'm not, some people are going to interpret this as John's like against people who are based on, I'm not. I actually want young men who want to gain power to do it, to do righteous things with it, who are more right-leaning. I want them to ascend. I don't think X is a reflection of that. You may be able to gain a big following on X with those guys. You may be able to ratio people with those guys. You may be able to have even a conference with those guys. I don't think you're going to actually get the scaling you need for national political anything, though. Not at this point. Not on X. You got to be on all these other platforms. And this is something I'm thinking through. I think X is important. I think X has a strength. You get news there. I mean, I certainly use it, but I'm reevaluating even, okay, how much do I use X versus YouTube? It seems like YouTube is the important place to be. So anyway, Gospel Coalition, I think, figured this out. I think, and people have been curious. People have been wondering forever, how come they keep cranking out the same bad stuff when they get so ratioed, they get so mocked and made fun of on X? I think G3 figured this out. They got so mocked on X for going against Christian nationalism. It seemed like it was a blowout. Their conferences seem fine. Doug Wilson also got, you know, it's smaller, but his group, they got kind of mocked. He still has, you know, Fight Laugh Feast is still going. Moscow is still good. There's nothing affecting the size of their stuff, or at least it doesn't seem like that from an outside perspective. And I'm talking again to sort of a niche reform world. Some of you don't even know what I'm talking about, but I think that we have got to gain some perspective, because if we're going to truly gain some real power politically to fight the left, we can't just play to X. We have to play to the larger group out there. And it's not the same group. And I've suspected this for a while, but the TGC thing, that article kind of jolted me. And I think it confirmed some of my suspicions. Oh, here's the article I was thinking of about Canada. Young Canadian Canadians favor conservatives in election despite Trump threat. So it's still a blowout for the conservative. I mean, I think Pierre lost his seat, didn't he? I mean, it was a blowout, but it looks like there's some Gen Zers, like 49% or something, didn't want the left. So, I mean, there's these kernels of hope out there. There's these rifts in the clouds, but I don't know. I don't know exactly what it means, and I don't know if we'll know what it means exactly for the next 5 to 10 years when we can get some more information. So, all right. That's pretty much the podcast. That's the analysis that I wanted to give, and that's answering the question that a lot of you have asked about why TGC continues, how it continues. They're doing just fine, guys. They're doing just fine. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't stop critiquing them. It doesn't mean that they haven't lost support among a certain demographic, but not enough to make the organization need to shut down yet. So I think there are some signs out there, like T4G, for example. They stopped doing their conferences. And I did interpret that as, okay, they're losing some momentum and that kind of thing. But institutional connections are important. Institutional connections, when you have churches and pastors and you're hooked into local churches and they're all in lockstep and they're saying, come to this conference, and they're saying, read this book, and they're saying, do this thing, that matters more than I think. As much as it matters to have Twitter, a Twitter presence, we need to scale up into organizations that have relationships with local churches and can mobilize that. I mean, in Colorado, that seems to be one of the issues that they have, is like, why aren't churches mobilized on this issue more? They need to be. This is a problem for the Southern Baptist Convention. There needs to be more mobilization. And that means more resources, guys. That means the Center for Baptist Leadership may need more resources, if that's your thing. It means TruthScript may need more resources. It means, and we are doing things. It means that if you find a good organization, they need the resources to be able to make the connections. Personalities and social media presence isn't going to do this alone. It's got to be in a real tangible community. And it's like online dating. I mean, what's the use of it if you don't actually get married to a real person in a tangible way? This has to meet reality. That's the goal. That's what we got to do. All right. That's the podcast. I'll take some questions or comments, and then I got to end it. And I got to figure out what's going on with my microphone and why it keeps cutting out. History is not being made on Reddit. No, it's not. No, it's not. Don't deceive yourself into thinking that. Don't just go into the echo chambers and, you know, everyone agrees with each other, pats themselves on the back, but you waste so much resources if that's all you're doing. It's got to have a connection to the real world, guys. If it doesn't, what good is it? Does Gen Z have the attention span to attend conferences? I don't know. TGC, G3, Desiring God, and Grace to You are all poisoned by Puritan Reform Calvinism. But they will never change. I've experienced. Okay, squirrel. We're talking about a different issue here. I'm looking at bigger picture here, guys. Gerard says, my church is very active in evangelism, discipleship, missionary work, but it's the exception. Yeah, that's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. And I'm not demeaning online work. That's very important too, but it can't just be that. And the work's got to make sense. It can't just be echo chamber stuff. All right. Well, that is the podcast. I am going to end it now, and I will re-upload a video that's got the silence parts taken out, and I'll figure out what's going on with the mic. Thank you, everyone. God bless.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.